Well, good evening. I'm happy to be with you again. And just to preface, what I have in mind for the evening is to I have a few things I have in mind to share, and then I hope we have plenty of time to open it up. So obviously, if there's questions, it's fine, but you may have your own things you want to bring into the discussion or comments or anything. So that's how I'd like to split the evening. So for me to begin, this last few weeks, I've been talking a lot about things that have been coming up for people around everything going on with this Ukraine war, and maybe that's been topic that's been coming for your group, I would imagine. So that's been coming in, and I have. I want to, that will come into the conversation, but I don't want to particularly focus on that or how we're responding to those things. Well, look, there's always, I view the world as being a mix of, there's lots and lots of happiness and beauty. And there's lots and lots of suffering and ugliness, and it seems like there's just a lot of both, pretty much all the time. And it seems to me it's a question of where, for each of us, our own experience, of course. But the world, even if Ukraine wasn't happening, there's a lot of scary stuff about it for sure. Then you'll hear there seems like there's always some armed conflicts going on around the world. Right? You'll hear about something in Sudan or, maybe some Shiites or Sunnis blow up a wedding party in Iraq, you'll hear, or just, stuff's going on. And it's sometimes I notice for myself, I'll hear it and it doesn't have an emotional, it doesn't land. It's a fact. It's just like a piece of information. Like, oh, 35 people killed in a bomb in a mosque or something. I go, oh man, that's terrible. And then I just kind of move on. And it can be like that sometimes. And I do think it's important that, we have to, even if we're not thinking of those things, there's plenty of difficulties either in our own life or around the world. And of course, we don't have to bring in, there's lots of things to be concerned about. We all talk about it all the time about what's going on with the climate and we, not to mention a global pandemic, and we just keep going on and on, and it's a lot. So we can come back and bring that in, and if there's more, in addition to what I want to say around that, that you have, you're welcome to bring that or anything in when we open it up for everyone. So please see whatever's real and true for you that you'd like to bring forth. I really invite whatever, even if it kind of goes off my own topic, that's totally fine. I just mentioned that because an important part of all of us, as you could say, as meditators or as Dharma practitioners, is knowing. I hope we, there's a lot of faces here. A lot of you I don't necessarily know well, but I certainly recognize many, many faces here. There may be some newer practitioners, but I get a sense that most people here are pretty deeply practiced and longtime practitioners. So hopefully you've spent time in your life reflecting on what your own aims and goals are for your spiritual life, for your meditation, for your spiritual practice. And I think it's an important thing to maybe from time to time, or at least have done, to really get clear on what your aims and goals are. And I bring that in because, the invitation from a Dharma perspective is we each have to come to our own, what our own aims and goals are. We don't all share the same, but certainly we're being invited to reflect on Dharma teachings to inform the choices we make. And we're also invited to take honest, hard looks at the reality of our lives. And then it's, as I was already talking about, some of the things in the world around us. Hopefully it's not all suffering all the time, although that may be in some of our experience, but it's whatever, it is, we want to reflect on, this is the way the world is. And we bring in all the classic teachings on impermanence and the transitory nature of life and dukkha. And, I could go on and on with all the teachings. And so, yes, we want to use those, all of that, to inform choices we make, because we want to know where we're aiming, because we, that will inform the practices that we do. What are the qualities we're cultivating in our own hearts and minds, right? And I don't assume that we all have the same goals. And it's really important that we honor our own truth. And one thing I think can happen, I hope what I'm about to say doesn't sound disrespectful, because I certainly don't mean it that way, but I feel like in the Dharma scene, let's just say in the Buddhist world, there can be a subtle or not so subtle or overt message that the real goal, if you really got it, was you've got to attain this thing called this enlightenment, this liberation, this awakening, this realization, whatever words you like, and get this thing called in the Sanskrit nirvana, in the Pali nibbana. That's what you're supposed to want to do. I personally think it's arrogance of other people to be telling us that that should be our goal. It's not for anybody to tell us that that has to be your goal. I realize I'm being a little, I'm not trying to be confrontational. Actually, I want to say I have tremendous respect for the Dharma path, for Buddhist teachings, for, you know, I've been immersed in, that's been my, it's a system, it's a path, and that's the path, been my path. So I have a lot of genuine respect for all the different ways that the path and the teachings evolve. You know, Buddhism's a big, big world. And even outside of Buddhist teachings, other spiritual traditions. But my only point is, you know, it can be like, well, maybe you just want to be a little happier. That's not less than anything else. Because if that's your truth, we don't have to explain it, justify it. And then people might say, well, but if you could really see, this is classic Theravada, if you could really see all the countless lifetimes you've been through and the amount of, there's a thing in Theravada, they say, if you could see all the tears that you've shed over countless lifetimes, it would fill oceans. Well, maybe so. Do you know if that's true? From your own experience? No. It's fine to hold that as, again, I'm not being dismissive of it in any way. I'm not being invalidating or disrespectful. I'm just saying it's a view. It may actually be the way the universe works. I don't know. Do you? No. You don't. So we hold these in a way to inform us so that we can make our own choices in what's important. And stress reduction, so you got recommended to meditate by your doctor, is not less than ending the cycles of birth and death in any way. And anybody who tells you that, it's both ignorance and arrogance. And this is being recorded. You can put it up on the web that I said that. Somebody can disagree with it. You may disagree with it. It's fine. I don't really care about that. I care about what are you up to in your life and what are the practices that's going to support that. Now, let's reflect on Dharma teachings to inform that. Right? I'll share mine with you just as an example, but you may be something totally different. So I have no interest. I don't ever think about Nibbana. It just doesn't enter my mind. Or ending the cycle of births and deaths and all that kind of stuff. Just, I'm not choosing. It's just not, I don't think about it. But I'm very much my all in on bringing it back into the present moment and taking the liberation through non-clinging as far as I can. And taking the perfection of love as far as I can. All of these Dharma qualities that we get taught, I'm all in. It's what my whole life is about. For me, you may have a different goal. I respect everybody's goal. But for me, it just happens to come right back into this present moment, which, you know, it's a cliche to say that's all we have, but it happens to be all we have. at previous times in my life, I did hold other belief systems about the cosmology and all of that. And that's just how it was for me then. For whatever reason, I can't tell you why. It just, I don't know. I just don't think about those things anymore. So I actually turns out I'm trying my best to do all the things that they say you should be doing if you're aiming to the cycle of births and deaths. But I just don't happen to hold that as a view. I'm more interested. For me, it's liberating my mind from clinging. And I don't know if there really is a perfection. I use this word perfection of love. That may be a little. Maybe I'm not being as articulate as I could be, but really taking the place where my heart doesn't close off ever to anyone and take that as far as I can. So that's what I'm up for. So others may be thinking of getting off the samsara in the cycle of births and deaths. Great, that's yours. Other people may, you can have many, many goals. So I'm repeating here, but I think it's so important that we don't let other people. And I don't care if they're sitting up on the stage with a shaved head and wearing a robe and everybody's bowing at their feet. You want to reflect on what they're saying, right? And then you come to your own truth. And that's what it is. It's not for anybody to tell you, including me. If what I'm saying doesn't land for you, then just forget it. It's not your truth. Now, once we get clear on, and you, by the way, we may not be like, when we say get clear, sometimes what we're doing as spiritual practitioners, we may have it very clear in our minds, and sometimes it may just be kind of a vague sense. That's fine. It's whatever it is for each of us. So you come to your own, but I do hope we'll reflect on Dharma teachings, reflect on what is it we actually know is true, what is it we don't hold, but maybe we hold them as beliefs, and that's fine too. I've got plenty of beliefs that I don't know if they're true. And so I'm not disparaging again any of that stuff, but you want to just have a clear view of how it all is, let it all come together and inform you. Then the question is, what are the practices that will support each for you? Because different practices lead to different results. And in our tradition, coming out of the Theravada, I think, we do these mental trainings, and some of the I would sum up all of, I'll just come to meditation practice. To me, Dharma practices comprises more than the meditation. But the meditation is the mental training part. So what is it we're training our minds to do? We want it to be in alignment with our goals. And so I think all of the practices that I know of are really some bringing together mindfulness, what we call the concentration, the ability of the mind to be steadier and less distracted, what we call insight. That's a big, big topic of what are all the insights. And then of the qualities of the heart, love, empathy. These aren't the traditional language, but I happen to like the word empathy a lot, but kindness, compassion, and find your own language. So all of these come together, and depending on our own needs and plus our own dispositions or wishes, we may bring them together in different combinations that naturally or choose to lean on one another. But all of those need to come together. Like we all want to have some degree of mindfulness. To me, mindfulness gets defined in a lot of ways. But for me, mindfulness it just means there's the practices of mindfulness, but actually the mental state of mindfulness for me just means not being lost on automatic pilot. That's how I define mindfulness. Hopefully you all know what I mean by that. And then there's practices of mindfulness, but the state of mindfulness, sometimes when people lose their mindfulness, someone will say, oh, that person went unconscious. And we know what they mean, but of course they're not unconscious. They're conscious. They're just lost and caught up in things. And then when we are mindful in the moment, we kind of wake up, if you will, out of that, and we're not on automatic pilot. That's why I say it that way. And we know what's happening. So we want to strengthen that. We want to strengthen the ability of the mind to be less distracted and more steady. We use the word concentration. It's not really a great word because it has so many connotations. It's a fine word, but it has a lot of connotations. And as long as we know what we each mean and what we each want, I think, and there's a whole world out there, what's the place of concentration. But certainly when we understand that the word samadhi, that we translate as concentration, means undistracted. That's actually the etymology of the word. Nobody's going to say be distracted, right? Everybody wants to bring the undistractedness. So we want to develop that. And then everything we mean about insights and that help us free our minds and the qualities of the heart. If you want to lean towards specific practices, it's fine. Or, you know, I'm not going to try to get into, it's a big world of all the different ways we practice. Then as we train ourselves, hopefully it comes back out into really, right, how we live and act and show up in the world. And again, we're going to meet the reality of our lives. And that includes all the really scary stuff going on out there. And also, you know, maybe the scary stuff going on inside here, it can be like that sometimes too, right? And so then a lot of the question comes, what will support us as we develop these practices? And I'll just share my own, and you'll have to find what your own is. For me, I still meditate. I've been meditating a lot of years, and I still have my I still practice actually as much as ever to this day. I have not done the experiment to see what would happen if I stopped, so I don't know. I find still the benefit, and I continue. For each of you, it may be different. Some of us keep up that kind of daily practice. Others, you know, it's not so easy or whatever, and we each find our way. And then the rest of the time, there's really only two things for me. And I'm sharing this because maybe this might resonate for you. And again, you might, or it may highlight that you've got something very, very different that's your own truth. For me, then, as I go about the rest of my day, it's really gotten very simple. Either my mind is caught in some kind of reactivity or clinging or not. Either my heart is closed off or it's open. And we all know that as we continue these mental trainings, part of the growing the mindfulness is that not only is there a purification process that naturally happens, even if we're not aware of it, just by going into these meditative states, it really does help recondition certain reactive patterns in our minds. If you did nothing but just touched into these meditative states, it really has its own benefit. It's called purification of mind. I can say more about it in a bit if you want to actually get into that topic. A lot of people don't talk about that much, but it really does happen. And we call it, anyway, it's just a disentangling of certain patterns in the mind. But all, so even when you're on automatic pilot, we're better just by virtue of having done these practices. But also we tend to stay on automatic pilot less of the time. And we don't worry about the time when we're on automatic pilot because, right, you don't know. We don't even know until you wake up and then you're back. And then we have some choice points. And then when you, and so we're lost less deeply. Isn't that true? But we also find that we're, when we're back, we're more able to authentically know what's happening and recognize that when we're caught in reactivity. And this is why it's, by the way, I'll come back to what I was saying in a moment, why it's so important to get clear, as I spent all that time in the beginning, on what our aims, our goals, our aspirations are. Because what's going to happen? What's going to happen is there's going to be the times when you're in attunement, in alignment with your highest, I like the word highest, deepest spiritual aspirations, and it's alive for you. There's going to be all the times when you're cut off from it. You're not feeling it, right? Maybe you're in anger or ill will and reactivity, and you may be right. You know, you may be right. But the question is, if, for example, I shared one of my aspirations that for my mind or my heart never to close off ever. So what do I do when I find that my heart's closed off? And the feeling of it is, you dang straight, it's closed off because that person's a whatever, you know, they're a jerk or whatever I think, right? I go back to my intention and aspiration. I didn't wait till the last minute to reflect on it. And I already know ahead of time. I can go back. I'm familiar with it. I touch onto it. And when I've lost it, that's okay. That's going to happen. But then I remember, oh, wait, yeah, it's not about whether I feel like it or not. That's not the criteria. It's like under any, it's supposed to be a more unconditional. So I want to be able to stay open throughout all different causes and conditions. Well, then we're able to more authentically let go and open the heart in a way that's not fake, that we actualize it for real in our lives. And it's not repressing ourselves and anything. We can just shift our state of mind, because our mind states and they're right. And they can shift in a genuine way. And so in this case for me, my practice got very simple. Again, I hope we all find ways to do the formal training, whether it's in retreats or in your daily life or whatever it is. And as that carries out, notice for yourself when you're in the stream of non-clinging with an open heart, you don't have to do anything. Just live. I'm not saying you have to fall back into automatic pilot, but there's nothing to do. You're just, and we can appreciate those times, right? And then during the times when we fall into reactivity or our hearts close off or whatever it is, those are the times when it's actually, we don't have to beat ourselves up or fall into more reactivity about it. We just know what's happening. Oh, it's like this. And then we can say, well, what will support me? And then what will help me to be able to actually let go or to actually open the heart? And we look to see, and of course, as we all know through all of us who are experienced practitioners, that over time, we get more tools in our toolkit to help us, right? And so we'll kind of know what to do. And we may not be perfect all the time, that's okay, but we get better in a wider range of circumstances, right? And so I find that one of the ways to think about it is like sitting in the formal meditation practices. You know, if we did nothing but just said, get in any posture you want that makes your body as comfortable as your body's able to be. Some of our bodies won't allow us to have much comfort. And we want to be that's when we need a lot of empathy and kindness, right? When it's like, if that's how it is, you know, that can be hard for sure. But so we want to find as much ease in the body as we can. And even for those of us whose bodies will allow us to find some ease. And even if we said, okay, get a posture where you're at ease and you don't have to do anything. Don't try to make anything happen. Just be there with whatever's happening. Just to be with ourselves can be really hard sometimes. Isn't that true? It can be, for sure, right? Forget about cultivating insight and concentration. Just to learn to be, let ourselves be, can be hard. And that's just part of how it is, I think, probably for most everybody. But that's a training. If you did nothing but try to be, it's like lifting, doesn't feel like little weights. Sometimes it feels just doing that can feel like lifting a big weight. But it's kind of like we lift these little weights so we build up some strength. So then when it's time to lift the big weights, like is World War III going to start? What's going to get me first? World War III is, you know, Putin's going to launch a nuke, or I'm going to cook to death in global warming, or a global pandemic's going to get me. Or we could throw probably some more, when it's time for that stuff, it's not always so easy, but hopefully we've got some allies we know how to meet more difficulties. And then the last thing I want to say is once we do these trainings, we know what our intentions are. We have a sense of how we want to show up in the world. How that manifests in some kind of action or response to the world, well, that's highly independent for all of us. So we'll each find our own ways in our lives of how we do that. And there's a wide range of how we might show up or be in response to what's happening, be engaged in some kind of action or just whatever it looks like for each of us. But to the extent we can bring some stability, even a little bit, and I know that's not always easy, we have a better chance, I think, to make wise decisions if we're coming not from a place of reactivity, and ill will, but from a place of equanimity, even if it's just a little bit. And I'll use an example. I used to use this. I'm going to close with this. I used to use this example many times, but I haven't talked about it in a while. Some of you may have, it's been a long time. You may have heard this if you've heard me speak years ago. I used to be very involved in prison meditation work. I first began in the early 1970s, actually. I moved into the Buddhist world in the mid-70s, but I started my practice in 1970, and I was in more of a Hindu-oriented yoga world, like the whole Ram Dass scene and that whole thing. Some of you may have been in all that stuff. And there's a guy named Bo Lozoff. He might still be around. I don't know. He started something called the Prison Ashram Project. Somebody's shaking and says, did he die? Well, you can share in a minute, but okay, so I've been out of it, so I didn't know. But, you know, he wasn't that young of a guy, so it wouldn't surprise me if he's not with us anymore. Anyway, and I was involved in that my whole ashram. Back in those days, we were going into San Quentin prison in the early 70s. It was a level 4 prison, which is in the California state prisons, it's the worst, highest, most difficult levels. And so I was involved in prison dharma. Actually, I used to be it was a volunteer position, but I was the Buddhist chaplain for two California state prisons down at Soledad, Salinas Valley State Prison and the Men's Correctional Training Facility that are both down there. Correctional Training Facility is a level 2. Salinas Valley State Prison is a level 4. And going in there, like it was like a Pelican Bay. Actually, they sent some guys there, which people don't know about Salinas Valley, who couldn't make it in Pelican Bay even. I mean, it was really serious. And we had some serious Dharma practitioners there. And I would go in every week and I'd go, you know, we had a whole group. And I was there for years. I went in. And one day a guy came up to me, Latino guy. He'd been with one of the Sereños or Norteños, Northerners or Southern gangs. I can't remember. And he had gotten into meditation and the Dharma, but he was all tattooed up and he was like heavy duty gang guy. And he came to ask me my opinion. He said, his gang had tapped him to go stab somebody in the other gang in retaliation for something that gang had done to somebody in his gang. He had to go stab this guy. And he said, he asked me, what should I do? He said, because I'm not going to go stab anybody. I'm into the Dharma. I'm just not going to do it. But if I don't go do it, my own gang is going to come and get me. What should I do? Well, first, I have to be very respectful because I'm getting ready in an hour or two when the group's done. I'm walking out the gate in my nice, safe bed. So am I supposed to, you know, sort of glow in here, floating off the ground with all my Buddhist wisdom and that I can dispense on him and then float out the gate, float out, float away? And I have to be very respectful. And so what I said to him was, I don't know. I said, the only thing I know is the same thing I just said for the group here. To the extent that you can... And I said, I know this isn't necessarily easy given the situation you're in, but to the extent you can be more steady and less reactive. In other words, there's a difference between being wisely responsive is not the same. Response is not the same as reactivity, reaction. I said, to the extent you can at least to some degree get in touch, you have the best chance of making the best choice you have. And then I didn't see him for a number of months until one day he showed up again. I just went, you know, what happened? And he told me the story, and he said he knew he wasn't going to stab the guy, but I thought he came up with a very creative solution where he said they make what they call a shank, which is my name, Shankman, by the way. That's like, ooh, you know, Shankman when you go into prison. So, but a shank is a homemade knife. They'll take pieces of plastic or whatever they get, and they really, I mean, they're sharp, and it's a knife. And he had it out on the yard where everyone can see. And when the time was right, he was near the person and he lunged at the person he was supposed to stab with the knife, with the shank. But he knew he wasn't going to stab him. So on purpose, he like stuck stumbled and fell, and as he went by, he just like barely grazed the guy. That satisfied his gang that he tried to do it. He didn't actually stab anyone. And he knew he took on, this is his words to me, took that on as his karma that he would go and do sometime in, they call it in the hole, be in solitary confinement for a few months for having done that. And that was his conscious choice. Now, I don't really know, but I like to think it's a good teaching story that in my advice of, well, if you can get steady, you have a chance of making the best decision. At least he did come up, I thought, what probably was about among the best decisions there. So I like to use that as a teaching story on it, hopefully whether he was really trying to get calm and then from that calmness, you know, the wisdom arose. I don't know. But I think it's kind of like that, because if we're in reactivity, we're not seeing clearly, right? We're just being driven by our ill will, our greed, hatred, and delusion, basically. And if we can just step back and settle into what we know, clarity, love, again, we do the best we can. It's not always easy. Then we just look to see what response arises, I think, can help us. And I think in a way that does come back to all these difficulties up with Ukraine or anything else. So, well, I went longer than I intended, so we're not going to have that long, but I'll stop here. Maybe we have about probably a little. So wait, let me ask. When would you say for when you read the metta cards, you know, how long does that usually take? Obviously, you want to give full time. Roughly, is that like a 3-minute kind of exercise, something like that? 3-minute, and then we can end. Okay, I'm just keeping track of the time so we can respect the time.
I wouldn't worry about a minute or two or five, Richard.
Okay, well, I appreciate you saying that because I try to be respectful of the time.
I know.
But
I wouldn't worry about a few minutes.
And well, that's fine. And actually, as I think about, we certainly wouldn't do we wouldn't do more than that. And obviously, people can, if you need to leave, you just log off the Zoom, right? And you just take care of yourself and go. So that's true. It doesn't keep anyone stuck. Okay, let's open it up. If anybody would, I'm not sure how to do it. You can make those golden hands come up or just wave, and I'll try to. Be a moderator here, I guess. Anyone have anything, want to say anything? Yes, it's Cherie and Bowman. If I mispronounced your name, please go.
You got it.
That's right, Richard. Thank you very much. What a great talk. This is really wonderful to hear you speak. And you bring up so many good points. You know, one of them was, you know, I've been struggling with samadhi, you know, for a long time, but, you know, and it's in waves, you know, but, you know, for you to use that word undistractedness is just like, that's, yes, that's what it is. It's like, oh, that was so insightful. It's really great. And, you know, I don't know. I just love I just took a bunch of notes because it was a great talk, Richard.
Oh, well, I'm glad it landed in a good way for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, thank you. Thank you. I don't know how to lower those hands, so you're going to have to just... Oh, you did it yourself. Okay. Yes. Now, someone named User, that's you. Please go. Except I can't hear you. Can others hear you? Hang on, we're going to stick. No, you're muted. We're going to stick with you. Would you just hang? Let's just relax. Let's do this. We can't hear you. And, but no. This is important. We should. So let me do this. Let's go to someone else and see if you can figure it out. But we're not going to lose you. Okay. Cause whatever you want to say, we care about. All right. We're coming back to you. Maybe coming back to you sooner than we thought.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's Patty. Please go, Patty. But yeah. Hi, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Richard. Thank you for this talk. I love what you said about not necessarily having to have the same goals that some teachers say is supposed to be our goal. It reminded me of the Buddha, who said when someone asked him, how do we know to believe you or the other teachers to come by. And he said, don't believe me or anyone else. See what works for you. And only believe it if it works for you. And I think you were echoing that. And I really appreciate that. And I love that. So thank you for it. Looks like that's what Deborah was going to say. If she can't get her on mute, I've said it for her. Okay, Deborah.
Okay, yeah. Well, anyway, I appreciate that, Patty.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate the message very much.
Yeah. Okay, well, good. Thank you for saying that. And you're Deborah. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Here, your name is User. Sorry. But I don't think we can hear you. But Patty says she thought that was what you were going to say. So are you okay? Are you complete since somehow we can't get the... All right, you seem good. And Patty channeled you. So good. So you're good. Okay, thank you. Rick, is that you? You have your golden hand up. Please go.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Well, your message really resonated with me because I've in similar place with all these things going on. And, you know, thing in Ukraine covers all the aspects that I've been dealing with all my life. You know, it's a oil-based dictator that's attacking democracy. And so that's the environment. The nuclear war is very close to, could easily go into a nuclear holocaust. And also there's just the fact of all the death of this unnecessary war going on. And I've come to a place with it because I've been following these things my whole life. My grandfather came from Ukraine, fleeing the Russian dictators, trying to wipe them out. And my other grandfather came from Nazi Germany, before World War I, from the Germans that were the ancestors in Nazi Germany. They were trying to kill him. He came to this country and they shipped him right back to Germany in the U.S. Army to fight the Germans. And he was very proud of that. He was very happy to become an American and get a gun and go back and shoot the guys who were trying to kill him. And then my father was a pilot in World War II and a fighter pilot, fought the Nazis. And then when I was groomed to, I just assumed it was part of my consciousness that I would take my turn fighting the dictators who were trying to kill us when my turn came. Only problem was when my turn came, we were the Nazis in Vietnam. We were the bad guys. So I went into the nonviolent movement. I was in the civil rights movement and I practiced nonviolence for a lot of years. I was really into it and the anti-war movement and the environmental anti-nuclear, you know, I've arrested a dozen times and got beat up by the Klan, got severe damage to my neck. Anyway, I did that for 20 years. And all these atrocities, they're just like the weather to me now. I see them and, you know, I get emotionally upset every time I see an individual case, but I just pass it off I come to a place, I'm not too sure what that place is, or I can live with it. I don't like that I can live with it, but I just live with it, you know, and carry on day by day. And so everything comes around. And now, I see the place where my dad and my grandparents, grandfathers, I see you have to have an army. You got to go kill these bad guys that are trying to kill innocent people. But also you got to practice nonviolence wherever you can. Right. And so I'm a very confused guy. And I just sit down to my meditation and try and make the best of it and try and carry on and see any beauty in the world. And I'm living, but I'm very confused about.
Right.
I don't know what to do. Just carry on living with all these complications.
Well, I appreciate all that. Thank you for sharing all that. And I think you speak, let's just say thank you very much for that. And, you know, welcome to the club. because it is card, right? Anyway, so thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I'm kind of the original member of the club. I've been doing this since I was 5 years old, you know?
Okay.
When I was 5 years old, I was thinking, and we'd go to the temple. I'm thinking, well, how am I going to get out of here when the Nazis come in?
Okay.
You know, where am I going to hide? And then I was practicing my duck and cover. I'd be walking home from school.
Yeah.
And I'd see where can I hide from the nuclear blast?
Well, I appreciate you sharing all that. I think it'd be good also, let's let, because we don't have that much time left. I don't want you to be cut off. I thought that was very poignant, all your sharing. And I appreciate it very much. You okay if we go on and let, I think Jan had her hand up. That's one more. Is that okay for you?
Just carry on.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. Jan, please go. I think maybe you might be the last one.
Oh, okay. I'll make it count. thank you very much for the talk. I too liked your definition of samadhi, but a question popped up in my brain, and I'm wondering where you see the role of a teacher or a mentor.
Oh, yeah, I'll give you my take on is that it or anything more? Yeah,
should I jump in? That's the whole thing.
Well, look, let me back up to that question. For me, I make a big, big deal about us finding our own inner teacher, our own inner knowing. I'm not talking about your ego necessarily. So, we try to discern, but our own inner wisdom, our own inner guidance. It's the inner teacher. And as that comes more and more alive, we can distinguish, right, more and more between our own delusion and our own wisdom. And sometimes we don't know the difference. We might think we're following our inner teacher and we're following our own greed, hatred, and delusion. Okay, it happens. We suffer and we learn, right? So I think it seems to be that way. But we come to be able to distinguish that more. So ultimately, I don't think we want to be at a place where we're arrogant, any of us, and say, nobody can teach me anything, right? Because I've got me, you know, we wouldn't want to do that, be like that. But it's more of a resting back in validating our own, I like to just call our inner teacher. And there's a strength and a solidity and something very profound there. Now, we each also, you know, we all need teachers, even if you're, you know, Major League Baseball and you're one of the top batters in the whole league, still has a batting coach, someone who can stand outside and watch the swing that they can't see ourselves. We can't see our own blind spots. So anyway, to make it short, I could actually do a whole talk on this so I would say two things are true at the same time. None of you here need any teachers. You don't need a teacher. What are they going to tell you that you don't know? Including me. Nothing. You don't need a teacher. And, wait, that's only half. And we do need teachers because we want to listen to what people say and reflect. And someone, whether it's just someone rolls around, like I roll into town and here I am. I get to meet with you once a year, a couple times a year, maybe. And I'll say what I say. And a few of you said what I had resonated. So that's good. And that might be a good thing, right? Other times we maybe work one-on-one and we work with people and they may, we'll tell them what's going on in our meditation, for example. We'll get guidance. But even when we do, so we want to be open and not be arrogant and think nobody can teach us anything. But at the same time, isn't it true that even if you were to completely surrender yourself to some teacher, you're still going by your own inner choice that you made to do that? You're still actually falling back on your own inner guidance. We're all doing our own inner guidance all the time, even if we really defer and listen to and spend a lot of times with teachers, because that's our choice to do that. So it's both are true at the same time. And I guess, how do you distinguish? Well, if you're drawn to teachers, you should do that. see what comes, and if it's leading you where you want to go, if it's helpful, you follow. And if it's not, that's okay. There's a million teachers out there, and they're all saying something different. And, you know, I'm sitting here saying you don't have to go to Nibbana. Well, the next man or woman who rolls into town and saying, did you hear what Shankman said last night? He's a deluded fool. And that's what they'll say. And so you will choose for yourself. They're wrong, but, you know, that, you know. I was waiting to say that. I've always wanted to say that. In the end, we have to listen to ourselves and make our best choices. Sometimes those choices will serve us well. Sometimes they won't serve us well, but that still will be a feedback mechanism to help us learn more. And that includes how we work with teachers. So you just take it how you want. You can't screw it up. That's what I have to say. Yeah. So, yeah. And I can say these things because I'm old. I'm not really in the scene anymore. And, you know, so I don't have to, you know, I'm kind of a loose cannon these days.